So we'll get started.
People come in, we'll catch them up. Thank you for being here this morning. It's for me, this is always just a fun opportunity to prepare a shiur, and now that school's a little bit lighter, you know, we could focus on learning a little more. So we're talking this morning about waiting between milk and meat. It's always a very curious custom, halakha, that we have. And the question that we're going to try to talk about today is, where does it come from altogether? And where do all the different customs come from? So here we have three people who are here, and I'm curious what custom either you grew up with or you have now.
I grew up with 3 hours.
3 hours, okay.
And now it's into the sixth.
3 hours, now it's into the sixth. Come on in, have a seat. We're talking about how long different each family waits between meat and milk.
Right, I know.
Yeah.
No, he's asking how.
No. So now we're going to ask everyone. So Ramesh was just telling me over breakfast, but just share with the...
So I grew up keeping 4 hours, and now I keep 6 of it.
Okay.
I grew up with nothing.
Okay. Delicious. Yeah.
And then started keeping 6.
Started keeping 6. Okay. Yes, and yourself?
Let's see. Can I remember this far back? What did my mother do? I'm 6.
6 hours, okay. So the really question is, you know, where all these different customs come from? People say, oh, you're from Holland, you're from Germany, you're from there. Okay, good, but had that develop? Why is it then different communities that develop differently? And really, so let's go way, way back, you know, and I don't have this on the source sheet, but way, way back is really, where does it come from in the Torah? So where does this whole idea of waiting between milk and meat come from in the Torah? There's an anchor, there's a pasuk in the Torah where essentially all the laws of milk and meat really come from. It's not on the source sheet, and it's Lo Tevashel Gedi, right? Famous pasuk, Lo Tevashel Gedi B'chalei Vimo. What does it mean? That don't cook a kid in its mother's milk. So think about it, right? Can't cook a kid in its mother's milk. And from there we get waiting 6 hours. Seems pretty far, you know, far-reaching extension. The basic halakha is, it's funny, what does it not say, actually, in the Torah regarding milk and meat? That's once you start looking at the pasuk and you think about it, what does it not say?
It
doesn't say anything about eating it. It just says you can't cook it. Hi, come on in. It just says you can't cook it. That's all. It doesn't even say anything about eating it. It's like an amazing thing. Prohibition, literally, if you just take the pshat, is about cooking it. However, though, it does say 3 times in the Torah, 3 different places, Lo Tevashel Gedi B'chalei Imo, and there's a rabbinic interpretation that one is for cooking, one is for eating, and one is for getting benefit. Okay? But it goes even further than that. Also, it really only talks about, right, a kid goat. What about other animals? It doesn't say literally in the Torah. So again, here again, Chazal, extrapolate. That's an example of a kosher animal. You know, other kosher animals are also included. The interesting debate, what about chicken? What about fowl? So a kid, right, is an example of like a livestock. What about fowl? Doesn't say. There's actually a debate in the Gemara. It's not our topic today, but there's one opinion in the Gemara that actually says it's permissible. And Rav Yossi, and in his town, they would have chicken and milk. They would eat together. You know, chicken sandwich and milkshake, or whatever you would prefer, with cheese on it. So, however, though, the custom is, of course, not to do that. So, take it that way. What about, what else do we do to extend this halakha? For instance, that does not say in the Torah, but yet that came into our customs. So that's fish. Fish is a really interesting one. That's like a sort of a different topic. Fish, the Shulchan Aruch says that we don't eat fish and meat, right? And many people have a custom of having a different plate or a different fork or right, or washing the fork. The Halacha seems to say that that's because of a sakana, a fear of some kind of a danger that will to our health if we mix those two. I'm not exactly sure medically what that danger is, but that comes from a different angle. What about our dishes? Right? So we can't eat together, we can't this. You have to have 2 sets of dishes?
I was, when we were shopping for dishes when I was engaged with my wife, we're in the store and we overheard two mothers-in-law with like the couple, and the mothers-in-law were obviously running the show there, and well, we have to get, you know, three sets of dishes, one for Milchik, one for Fleishik, one for Pesach. You know, they're in this like fancy China store. I was like, wow, it's nice if you could afford that. But anyway, but you know, we have dishes, we have silverware, we have, you know, it keeps getting extended. We have nowadays even more different sinks, different ovens, different, you know, two kitchens. You know, it just goes on and on. So I guess one question before we jump into our main topic is, why do we think, just from a more philosophical Jewish philosophy standpoint, why is it that these halachot have ballooned and expanded the way they have? Some levels, and I'm not going into all the details right now, some of the levels we described are considered d'oraita, and some of the levels Chazal have extended and said, no, midoraita, it's permissible, but midrabanan, we're going to require you to do X, Y, and Z. I'm not going into all the details of which is which, but clearly the halachot have expanded tremendously from this little pasuk of lo tevashel gdi b'chalei mimo, not to cook a kid in its mother's milk. And the question really for us is, how do we explain that? We don't do that for every halacha. Why is it when it comes to this halacha, there's such an extension? So, anyone have a thought?
Separate from other nations. I don't know. I think sometimes kosher has this other advantage or aspect in which it keeps you separated from other cultures, because you can't eat with them and you can't drink with them. And
right.
So around the table is an important place.
You're saying a similar idea. Right. So what happens there, and keeping that separation goes a long way to keeping us separate. And intermarriage, etc., and mixing with other cultures, and that I think that's a very compelling idea, because we do find that in other areas too. With wine, you have a similar halacha, right? Stam yenam. Even if the wine is kosher, we don't drink wine that was made or produced or handled by a non-Jew. Again, even though, you know, the other types of drinks you could, but it's an idea of keeping us separate. And really it has. And even today, right? People travel, business, this and that. They always have to have that kosher meal. Or, you know, it's always a constant reminder of being somewhat different. Okay. So that could certainly be one approach, and there could be many other approaches as well, but it's just interesting to note. But our topic today, let's jump into it, is this idea of particularly the halachot of waiting between milk and meat. So if we think about it, so you're not allowed to eat it together, right? That's clear from the pasuk. Actually, again, technically midoraita, you're only not allowed to eat milk and meat that was actually cooked together. But to eat a meat sandwich with a cup of milk, midoraita is not a problem. Again, that's rabbinic level of prohibition. But what about if I ate one and now I want to eat another? So again, before we even look at the sources, what would we think the halacha should be based on what we know?
Shouldn't be a
problem as long as you're not eating it together. What might be a little bit of a problem, though, if you're eating one after the other. I mean, I'm not getting into which one, milk, meat, or which order. What?
New fork, new plate.
New fork, new plate, right? Okay. So what if I get new fork, new plate? So there's no residue, right? So I'm not eating. If I take my cheesecake fork and I dig into my cholent or whatever it is, so then I'm eating it together. So if I have a new fork, new plate, I'm not eating it together. Shouldn't be a problem.
A risk of mixing them up if it's too close together.
So that's already fine. But is there, what else could the potential be for mixing?
Digestive.
So in your body. So that's it. Before you even get to the digestive system, which we'll get to in a few minutes. What about in your mouth or on your, you know, what about cleaning off? You know, you have some, I don't know, piece of cheese still on your lips or whatever it might be, right? What about that? And then you get to the digestive tract as well. So that's really where the idea comes from. And what you find is, and we're going to go a little out of order here with the sources. Source 7, it's a little bit of a confusing source, so I'll explain it. And it's the real source of these halachot is the Perek Basar B'chol of the 8th Perek of... of Chulin, Masechet Chulin. So the source 7 says, Tana Agra Chamur de Rabbi Abba. So Agra, the father-in-law of Rabbi Abba, said, Ofu Gvina Nechalim B'Apikoren. He held that chicken and cheese you could eat, and it's a question what Apikoren means, but basically you can eat together. Or at least, I'm sorry, one after the other. Hutani Lavu Amarla, he explains what he means. You're allowed to eat it one after the other. Below Natila Yadayim, below Kinua Chapez is important. He says, chicken you can eat, again, we don't hold this way, but chicken you can eat one after the other with cheese without washing your hands and without cleaning out your mouth. Now, Kinua Chapez, again, I'm sparing you the most of the Gemara there, but Kinua Chapez, the Gemara talks about as not rinsing your mouth, but cleaning it by eating something like a bread in between. So it I don't know, like the technical term. What?
Like sort of people who serve sorbet after fish.
Right. It cleanses the palate. It sort of brings out all the little pieces stuck in the teeth, perhaps. so you're allowed to eat the chicken and the cheese, according to this opinion, according to Agra, without washing hands. And what's the concern about the hands? What's the issue with hands? I mean, nowadays, obviously, everything's with this fork and knife, but maybe, you're eating with your hands, you're touching the food.
So he's not talking about ritual hand washing.
Correct. He's talking here about for cleanliness. But, so the Gemara, later on the Gemara says, Ofu gvina in basar gvina lo. This might be true about chicken and cheese, but when it comes to actual meat and cheese, you can't. Meaning, when it comes to meat and cheese, you need to wash your hands, and you need to cleanse your mouth with some kind of a bread-type thing. For the simple reason we said, or else there's food left, and it's going to be mixed, as you're eating it. We'll leave off the rest. So that's one source. One source that's the most simple source that talks about waiting or separating between milk and meat when we eat, talks about just doing some kind of a cleaning process in between meat and milk. Cleaning hands and cleaning your mouth makes a lot of sense, right? And then, so once you do that, clean your hands, you clean your mouth, seems to be from this source, you're ready to eat the cheese or the milk. Because now you're not going to mix it at all. And it seems to be, what Chana said, that the concern about it mixing it in your digestive system is not really a concern, right? The concern is as you're eating it. Once it's in your body, it's in your body, We're not concerned with, but that's like a real chumrah, bas v'chalav in your digestion. So, it seems like it makes a lot of sense. However, let's go back to source one. Source one is the main source for all the different customs that we have. And we're going to start to see now different opinions. So this is the next page of the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara quotes Ba'amine Rabbi Asim Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara quotes an exchange between two Amoraim, Rabbi Asi and Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Asi asked a question from Yochanan. He says, "Kama Yisha," in the quotation all the notations here are my own. So, kama yishe bein basar l'gvina. How long do you have to wait between meat and cheese? This is really our question. So, Amalei, Rabbi Yochanan answered him, v'lo klum. You don't have to wait at all. Let's just stop right here, right? Let's go home. Let's see. Ini, is that so? Said Rav Asi. V'amar Rav Chista. But I heard Rav Chista say, achal basar, asur lechol gvina. If you ate meat, you're not allowed to eat cheese. Gvina mutalech al basar. If you eat cheese, though, you're allowed to eat meat. But nevertheless, Rav Chista says, but if you eat meat first, you're not allowed to eat cheese afterwards. So how could you, Rav Yochanan, tell me you don't have to wait? Ella, rather, kama. So what did Rav Yochanan mean? Kama yishaving gvina lebasar amalei velo klum. Rav Yochanan's answer, velo klum, was referring to when you ate the dairy first. When you eat the cheese first, then you need not wait. And there's a discussion, it's not our topic really today, but there's a discussion about whether or not you do have to clean out your mouth, the way it was described before, and wash your hands, for cheese to meat as well. But you certainly don't have to wait any time period. So that's what he was talking about. But clearly here, you have the setup, or you have the, it's laying down the concept that when it's different that that when you do eat the meat first, there is a requirement of some sort of waiting. Kama yishev, says Rav Asi, how long do you have to wait? It's not really answered. We don't know the answer, but we know that there is some time that you have to wait. So now let's go back. The Gemara continues going back to that statement of Rav Chisda. Gufa. Amar Rav Chisda, ocha basar asur lachol gvina, gvina mutar lachol basar. If you ate meat, you're not allowed to eat cheese afterwards right away, but cheese, you're allowed to eat meat right away. Amalei Rav Acha, Rav Yosef, Rav Chisda, basar shbein hashinayim mahu. What about the meat that is between your teeth? So what's the question here? Meat between your teeth. Question is that still considered meat? After the salivary glands and enzymes have done their business, do we, you know, at which point do we still consider it to be problematic, right? It's one thing you wash off your hands, you wash off the outside of your mouth, but what about what's already inside your mouth? So the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Bamidbar, the story of the Slav. It says, Habasar, Kari Halei Rav Chisda answers, Habasar Odenu Ben Shinehem. The meat was still between their teeth. So what does that imply? Even though it was between their teeth, the Torah still refers to it as meat. So it still has the designation, it's still considered categorically as defined as meat, even though it's between their teeth. So why are we talking about this meat between their teeth? Well, what does it have to do with what we were just talking about waiting between milk and meat? Any ideas about what this little side point? Here we are, we're talking about Rav Chisda, that if you eat meat, you're not allowed to eat cheese. And then the Gemara starts with a somewhat independent question of meat between one's teeth, what is that considered? What's the connection? Mm-hmm. Right, good. So perhaps this is an explanation. You know, one thing that's not clear from this Gemara is why. Why is it that when it comes to, right, you know, the Rav Chisda makes that distinction between what the order is and what's the reason for that distinction? If you're not allowed to eat milk and meat, okay, you're not allowed to eat milk and meat together. That shouldn't matter which one you eat first. Right. If you have to clean out your mouth, you have to clean out your mouth for either one. If you have to wait, you know, well, why should there be a difference? So perhaps this is one clue as to why there is a difference and why it is that, which we'll see in a few minutes about how we got to our customs, but why is it that we differentiate between the order of meat first versus milk first? Could be because when it comes to meat, I don't know about you, but I know, you know, when one eats meat, it usually does stick between one's teeth more than when one eats cheese or other dairy products. So, and since meat between the teeth is still considered meat, and so if you have that meat between one's teeth, I guess it's a little gross now that we're like talking about it in such deep detail, but then you eat milk, there you go, you're mixing milk and meat in your mouth. Certainly not where you don't want to mix your meat and milk in your oven, you certainly don't want to do it in your mouth, right? So perhaps this is a very strong clue, and this is probably really what the Gemara means here by quoting this exchange between the two of them, is to really understand why is it that we're more strict when it comes to meat first. There's another opinion, and that's Rashi. So before we finish the Gemara, let's go to source 2. Rashi on the Gemara says, Asur lachol gvina, why is it that when you have meat first, we're more strict about that? Rashi says, Mishum de basar motzi shuman. Basar has... It's greasy, fatty. V'hu nidbak b'peh, gets stuck around the mouth more. U'ma'arich b'tamo, and the taste of the flavor sort of is there. You know, we've all experienced, right? We have like a meat meal, and you might still taste it, you know. The taste lingers more, and we'll leave it at that. So again, a similar concept of, you know, the taste or the actual fatty or the actual meat between the teeth, something is lingering much more than when it's the dairy first. And the concern is, this is a source sheet up here, and as the concern is not to have
that mixing of the meat and milk in one's mouth.
So that's the reason, it seems, for the difference in between the two. Any questions before we go on? This is like part one.
Doesn't it also take longer to digest meat than it does dairy? And that's also part of it?
So I wonder if that's what Rashi means with umarich betamo. We're going to see something about that more, that's going to address that more a little bit later specifically. You know, and to what effect does the digestion have to do with it?
One other question I have based on what you're saying there between the teeth. I mean, I understand those days they didn't have floss, they didn't have toothbrush.
Right.
What do we do now?
Right.
I mean, it's very easy to, you know, brush your teeth.
Clean it out.
And go on with the next thing.
Clean it out. Clean out all that fattiness. Clean out the teeth. And so maybe if the reason is that reason, so maybe if you actually clean it out nowadays, like you're saying, then you should be able to eat cheese right away. That's a great question. In fact, there is an opinion that's going to say that. We're going to see that right away. Yeah.
But the whole idea of ma'arich tamo is also with the dishes. That's also part of why we have separate dishes, because it blends a taste to the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we have brushes and soap, we can't have one set of pots. We can't have one set of silverware.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we can clean them very well.
Right. That's interesting. It is the same. We use the same phraseology, Tom Kikar. It's a little different there. There the understanding or the assumption is that the dishes or the pots, when they heat up, so they expand and they swallow, bolea, the tom of the, whether it's in either direction, truthfully, meat or milk. And then when you cook with it again, it expands again, and it comes out again. The brushes and all that don't, you know, it's not expanding unless you kosher and all that. This is a little different, and we are going to see, you know, kind of what you both of you are talking about actually is going to come out to be two different opinions in a few minutes in the tour, in the early Achronim, about this issue. It's going to be actually nafka mina, but whether or not you could floss it out, or whether or not that works or not. So actually, those two opinions we're going to see in a minute, so Baruch Shekivantem.
This is more historical. Do we have any sense, how often they actually ate meat?
So, I don't know how often they ate meat, but we're going to see in a few minutes about their meals and their habits. We're going to see that in a minute.
I was thinking about that too, sitting in southern France. You know, right. Probably the dairy products are very important, but not meat.
Why is that?
They make a lot of cheese.
I don't know. Cheese? Maybe, but
I just
both.
Before refrigeration, right. And then, right. Know, it was expensive.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, was it something they just did on Shabbat? Or
right. I don't know. I mean, what was it, the same panic that we have about becoming fleishig and you know, not being able to have?
Right.
I wrote here ice cream.
Right.
You know, I was debating between titling it "When Can I Eat Ice Cream?" When can I have my iced coffee? But you know, to each their own. So.
Rabbi Linton?
Yeah.
I just have a question on the Gemara.
Yeah.
It seems kind of, maybe the Gemara is kind of picky, but I can't imagine that Rabbi Yochanan didn't see a difference between milk first or meat first.
No. He did. He was, the Gemara justifies it by saying he was only referring to Gvina first. When it comes
it
to Gvina, it's Loklum.
It doesn't say that. It says, Bein Basar Gvina. So he wouldn't say, well, low clum, if he was thinking...
Are you saying you don't like the Gemara's answer, Ella, right. That it sort of reinterprets what happened?
Right, they're switching the language.
Right, right.
I mean, Yochanan was smarter than that.
Right, so how could he miss... What, he misunderstood the question? Right.
Either, or somebody misquoted.
Right, okay. I mean, the Gemara has this pattern in a lot of places, and that's it's a sort of a general question, and it's a good point. But in the end, the Gemara does say that Rabbi Yochanan really agrees with Rav Chista. And there is no debate. Everyone seems to agree that there is this difference. Okay. So let's now let's kind of move into the next phase, which gets us into starting to understand the different customs. So the first place where we see this is the end of the Gemara, the passage with Mar Ukva at the end of Source 1. So the end of Source 1 says, Amar Mar Ukva, Ana laha milta chala bar chamra legabe abba. This is a very interesting phrase. I am, regarding this matter, chala means vinegar, bar chamra, vinegar, the son of wine. So it's a metaphor. He's saying, my father was wine, you know, could be compared to wine, obviously, which is better. And I'm like vinegar when it comes to this matter. What's he referring to? The Ilu Abba, second line, rather, because my father, Kiavi Achel Bisra, when he ate meat, Ha'idna, let's say he ate meat now, is it 10 o'clock in the morning, Lo Hava Achilna Gvina Ad Lamachar Ad Hashta. He would not eat cheese until the following day, until Tuesday, at 10 o'clock. He waited a full 24 hours between meat and milk. Now, does anyone want to stop here or no? We don't want to stop here, right? That would be cruel. V'ilu ana, and me, b'hasu data hudala achilna. In this very meal, I do not eat it. Meaning, in this same meal that I'm eating meat, I will not have milk or cheese. L'sudat acharina, however, achilna. But when it comes to the next meal, then I will eat cheese. So my father used to wait 24 hours till the next day, the same time the next day, eight late. I wait until my next meal. I separate it out by different meals. So here we already get to something different than what we saw in the source 7, which was the original source, which seems to basically say all you need to do is clean out your mouth with the cheese, with the bread, or with the floss, or whatever it was, and wash your hands, make sure there's no residue, and you're good to go. All of a sudden, you have Marukva, who introduces this idea of bein su'uda l'su'uda, waiting to the next meal. And the question is, you know, when it comes to halakha, there's a few questions. First of all, when it comes to halakha, what do we follow? And how does it get explained? And the second is, what does he mean, bein su'uda l'su'uda? What does that mean? I don't eat it this meal, but I eat it next meal. What are some possibilities that you think that could mean? Obviously, you're a little bit biased based on what we do, but if you could try to think, you know, with an open mind, what could that mean? Bein su'uda, I wait till the next meal. What does that mean, wait till the next meal?
A clear separation between the two.
So it definitely makes it more of a clear separation, exactly. But practically speaking, what does that mean?
People ate meals.
They
didn't necessarily snack in between. So the next time
you
would be eating, it might be
several hours.
I mean, they're not always eating like us.
Right.
Small meals. Is that giving a time frame?
No.
It's not giving a time frame. All it's saying is next meal.
Right.
So in theory, let's say I have one meal, hamburger, whatever it is, for breakfast. I don't know. And, I finish that meal. You know, 20 minutes later, I'm going to move for, like I said, iced coffee. Can I have that or not? Is that considered the next meal?
No.
No. But you said it's not a time issue.
Right, but it's also not a meal. You're not sitting down and having...
It's a prohibition against snacking? That would actually make a lot of sense from a health perspective. But fortunately, there's no such prohibition. So let's see. I mean, Tosfot. Let's take a look at Tosfot right here on the same Gemara. Tosfot source 3 says as follows: it's 12th century, and I wrote key opinion 1, which we're going to see three key opinions here. L'sudat acharin achilna, next at the next meal. Lav b'sudat sherigilna so achat shachar achat arvit. We're not talking here when you talk about meals. Talking about your two. So to answer your question, in those days they used to eat two meals a day. Shachrit and Arvit. Shachrit means like late morning, and Arvit is like early evening. Okay, those are their two meals, two main meals. So we're not talking about those two meals that we eat, meaning they have to wait from the morning meal to the evening meal. El afilu li'alter. Li'alter means right away. It's the underlined part. Even right away, you can eat cheese. Im sile kashulchan. If you took away the table in those days that they ate at these little tables, took away the table, or you just cleared the table. To clear the dishes, as was said before, ubireich, and you benched, so the meal is over, mutar. Now you can have your iced coffee for dessert. De lo plug, Rabbanan, because rabbis didn't differentiate. When they said next meal, all it means is next meal. They didn't give any kind of other parameters to it. So according to this opinion, according to Tosfot, this is nice, right? You really don't have to wait. You just can't have it at the same meal. Now, why does it matter not having it at the same meal? So it's really what you said before. Just adds that separation. So it's not, you know, if it's part of one meal, it could get, the lines could really get blurred, especially, you know, what we talked about before, that you have when it comes to meat, there's grease, and there's, it gets stuck on you. And you know, so when it comes to meat, we're going to separate it even more. Not only do you have to clean your hands and clean your mouth and this and that, but you also have to bench and wait to another meal. And this is the opinion of Tosfot. So where does all these hours, where does all that come from? Four, we had in the beginning, 3 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours, into the fifth, sixth, you know. So all that really comes from the Rambam. So let's see the bottom of the page. Good old Rambam. So the Rambam in Sefer Kedusha, it's interesting, in the Rambam, he has 14 books. It's called the Yad HaChazaka for the 14 books. Yadalit. And his 14 books, one of the books is called Kedusha, the Book of Holiness. And you would think in the Book of Holiness, you might have the laws of Beit HaMikdash, you might have the laws of purity, maybe Shabbos, right? It's a Kadosh, it's a holy day. You say Kiddush. So really, in the Sefer Kedusha, you know what he has there? He has laws of prohibited relations, sexual relations, and machalot asurot, the foods that we can eat or can't eat. So clearly what you see here, it's a very profound idea, is that according to the Rambam and many other, you know, sources in Judaism, the way to achieve holiness, Kedusha, is through showing some level of restraint when it comes to our physical desires. And so the path to holiness is not only through maybe shul and things like that, but Shabbos, but through what we eat and how we eat and our relationships. So in Sefer Kedusha, the Rambam has Malchalot Asurot, and the Rambam has as follows. Misha achal, source 4, Misha achal basar b'tchila, if you ate meat first, bein basar behema, bein basar of, whether or not it's livestock or fowl, that's what we said before, right? According to our custom, we equate the two, practically speaking. Lo, underline, lo yochalach rav chalav, you're not allowed to eat afterwards milk, ad she yishe beinehen, until you wait between them, kedei shir su dacheret, the amount of time that it would take you to get to your next meal. V'hu kemo sheisha'ov, and he gives a time. V'hu kemo sheisha'ov, that was the average time between meals. Mipnei ha-basar shel bein ha-shinayim. Why? Why do we have to wait so long? Because of these meat between the teeth. Sheino sar bekinuach. That when you do the kinuach and you eat that bread that we talked about before that cleans out the mouth, it doesn't do what flossing does. There still is meat there between the teeth, and the bread can't get it out. So you have to wait 6 hours. What are some questions on this Rambam that you might have, either on the language or on something he says?
Well, is this the first time that meat and poultry are equated?
No. So in the Gemara, it's already equated. I said there are different opinions in the Gemara. Rav Yossi held it was okay, but the other opinions in the Gemara say it's not okay. Rambam is codifying the halacha based on the opinions that say poultry. Again, it's rabbinic, according to most, but still, from a practical perspective, we apply the same rules. Well, first of all, notice when it says the amount of time that he says. Does he give an exact amount of time? No, he says kimo sheishot, which is approximately, if I was translating this, I would say, you have to wait till the next meal, which is approximately 6 hours. Why does he say that?
I assume that was the custom in Alexandria.
Why doesn't he give an exact time? Well, I mean, I think just practically, and I even saw this in one of the sources, they didn't, in those days, they didn't eat their meals like exactly at noon and exactly at six. I mean, it's everyday life, you know? It's like around lunchtime and dinner time, and no one's sitting there with the watch. Also, they didn't have watches like we have. It was like sundials or who knows what, you know? It wasn't like so precise to the second, the way we're like, you know, watching the clock with the iced coffee in our hand, like, when can I eat it? You know, in those days, it wasn't so precise time. So it was kimoshe show. It was
it seems like time was pretty precise, though.
Yeah.
They figured out times for davening. precise.
Right, but again, I don't know if anyone had an exact... How'd they know the times of davening? Mishayakir et chaveiro. When you recognize your friend. That's not exact second. So nowadays we have the atomic clock with the exact second. You know, so we've translated into that. But in those days, they weren't operating with that. They had their times. There were zmanim, of course, but it was still a little bit more flexible, I guess you could say. What? Yeah, that's meal time, right? So that's number one. Number two, he says also the reason is the meat between the teeth. She'eno sar b'kinuach. So what happens after 6 hours to the meat between the teeth? That's what I was wondering when I read this Rambam.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have the meat. It doesn't come out, you know, with regular rinsing out your mouth or cleaning out your mouth. And now it's 6 hours later. So why now? So I can't eat because I can't mix it. But now it's 6 hours later. So why can I eat it now? Right, so maybe it's gotten, you know, the enzymes have broken it down maybe to a certain point where now, maybe up until now, was considered basar, like the Gemara says. Maybe after 6 hours already, we even no longer consider it basar. Perhaps that's the explanation of the Rambam. Okay, and that's exactly what the Me'iri says, source 5. Sheishoto, I'm going to move a little faster with some of the sources now. Sheishoto karov lazeh, shebishi'ur hazeh nitakel af bimkomo. That after this time, it's dissolved or digested, rather. Even though it's still in the teeth, it's still digested, and it's no longer considered basar. And where do you get the 6 hours? The Lecha Mishnah says, source 6, Shechein Su'udat Talmid Chacham b'sha shishit. So Su'udat Talmid Chacham would be the 6th hour of the day. That means from the morning, from like the crack of dawn, 6 hours into the day, that's when the Talmidei Chachamim would eat their first meal. And of course, then you would have the evening meal 12 hours into the day, which is right around nightfall. That's when they would have their evening meal, and those were their two meals. And that's how we get to this idea. The Rambam translates it into 6 hours. The Gemara never says 6 hours. All it says is wait till the next meal. And the Rambam translates it into 6 hours. So really what you have is three main opinions. Oh, we didn't see the source 9 is another opinion. That's the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam really goes with the first Gemara. Rabbeinu Tam, where is it? Yeah, Rabbeinu Tam really goes with the first Gemara. That all the Gemara talked about was rinsing out and cleaning out your mouth. And that's the Rabbeinu Tam. And the Rabbeinu Tam explains that Mar Ukva was a chumrah. He was a midat chasidut. You know, essentially, all you have to do is clean out your mouth, rinse out your mouth. Marukva, whose father waited a full day, and he waited to the next Suda, he was a chassid. He was going beyond the letter of the law. We don't have to follow that, says Rabbeinu Tam. That source, I'm not going to do it inside, source 8 and 9. So you have Rabbeinu Tam, who's the most lenient. All you have to do, and it makes sense, right? Rinse out your mouth, clean it out with bread or something like that, so it takes the grease and all the oil away, and then you're ready to go. Clean your hands so you don't have any meat or anything on your hands, and you're ready to go. Tosfot, which is within the Balei HaTosfot, you have Rabbeinu Tam, and you have the Ri and different opinions. So the other opinions of the Tosfot that we saw says, no, Mar Ukva is Halacha L'maaseh. You do have to hold like Mar Ukva. But what does it mean the next meal? It's not a time frame. It just means you have to have a separation. So you bench, you clear the table, you clean the table maybe. Maybe you write, you wash your hands also, you clean your mouth too. And then you could eat milk right away, again, as long as it's a new meal. Then you have the Rambam, who's the most far-reaching, who says not only do you have to do all those things, you also have to wait 6 hours in order so it's that the meat between the teeth will become more digested, more dissolved. So how do we get to our... I'm just looking at the clock here. There's an interesting side point, which I won't do inside, but it's source 10. That was what you were talking about, which is there seems to be almost two concepts here. Within the 6 hours. Mm-hmm. One is that it's about the meat between the teeth, that's the Rambam. And the other is that it's motzi shuman, like the Rashi, umarich b'tamo. Great. So that's a digestive. So the tour talks about, the tour is the son of the Rush, who's one of the main halachic rishonim. And the tour says, this exact nafkamina. What if you clean your teeth out? So according to the Rambam, if you use a dental floss, you should be able to eat the milk right away. And according to Rashi, he talks about what if you chewed, it's a little gross, but what if you chewed meat for a baby? Lo aso latinok, he says. So you're not actually eating it yourself. You chew it and you spit it out In theory, again, let's just take a, you know, in theory that someone might do this. You chew it and you spit it out. What would be the halakha? So if we're concerned with meat between your teeth,
then it still
is a concern to meat between your teeth because you chewed something, right? Mm-hmm. But you didn't swallow it. So because you didn't swallow it, you should be able to eat it right away. If the concern is Rashi, that it's like in your digestive system for a long time, very strong, then you should be able to eat it right away. So depending on who you hold like, yes, indeed, according to the Rambam, you might say with dental floss, you don't have to wait for those 6 hours. But, of course, he says at the end, what do you expect he's going to say? We're machmir like both. We're machmir like both. So which means we're concerned not just about the meat between the teeth, but we're also concerned about that long flavor and taste that's still in the mouth and still in the body. So as long as you still have the taste. So either way, even if one would chew it for the baby or one would just clean out the teeth, either way, one would still have to wait within this 6 hour approach.
And that so, applies to dairy.
Correct. Because these reasons do not apply in that direction. So that's what he says at the top of the next page, page 2, Tov l'echoz b'chumrei bet ha-tamim. It's good to follow the stringency of both opinions. So that's, that's how we get to our chumra that we live with. So we have a few minutes left. I want to get to the real question that we started with, which is how do we get to so many different opinions? So we see there's three main opinions in the Rishonim and in the Halakha as to what do we do. Again, according to Rabbi Yonatan, you just have to clean out your mouth. According to Tosfot, you just have to bench and start a new meal. Clean, of course, and bench and start a new meal. According to the Rambam, you got to wait 6 hours. So how do we get to our time? Well, the first time you see this is in the Darkei Moshe. Darkei Moshe is source 11. It's like line 4. He quotes the beginning, and then he says, Rabim Nogim Lahakel, in the third line. Many people have a leniency, Osalem Shar Midaitam, and they make this somehow compromise in their minds. And Lahamtin Sha Achat, they wait 1 hour. You ever hear this?
Yeah, the Dutch,
right? You wait 1 hour. Achar Sudat Basar. He says, where does this come from? Lo ashkechan taima. But miyimcha biyadehem. But how can we argue with them? Hoel v'atosvot v'arav yamatirin. So he says, I don't know where they got this 1 hour from, but truthfully, what do they have to rely on, the people who say 1 hour? Tosvot. Because Tosvot says you don't even need 1 hour. All you need is to start a new meal. So they're waiting 1 hour. Okay, so you know what? They're following Tosvot. And Darkei Moshe is the Ramah, he's the Ashkenazic halachic authority, and very often they follow the Tosfot, they follow the German opinions of the Rishonim. So it's basically halacha l'masa, it's okay as long as you bench, and that's fine technically. So therefore, they're waiting 1 hour, they're even going a little bit beyond that, and that's where that perhaps that opinion comes from. That Dutch minhag of 1 hour, it's not crazy, it's not from, it comes from the Tosfot. However, the Shulchan Aruch in Source 12, which is Rav Yosef Karo, which is representing usually the Sfardi, and he usually quotes directly from the Rambam. Indeed, he does here as well. Shesh Sha'ot. He doesn't say Kamo Shesh Sha'ot like the Rambam. He takes out the Kamo, and he just says Shesh Sha'ot. And he says both ways. Even if it's lost a Latino, and even if you took it out, you still have to wait, like the tour. And he quotes this direct opinion of the Rambam, and that's where many of us get the Shesh Sha'ot from. What about the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch? So the underlined part. There are those who say, and this is the opinion of Tosfot, you don't have to wait 6 hours. As long as you clean out your mouth, you bench, it's mutar. He quotes Tosfot. But what's the minhag? Even in, he was in Krakow, the Rama, so even in Poland and Ashkenaz, what's the minhag? Lahamtin sha'achat. Even if you're going to do this, you wait at least 1 hour. So somehow we see even this opinion of Tosfot that says all you have to do is bench and then you're ready, somehow that got extended to 1 hour. Like no one actually does that. Even that somehow got expanded, like we talked about at the beginning of this year, about how all these halachot got expanded. And then he quotes at the very end, I'll just skip to the end, Yesh medaktikim lahamtim sheishod. But even the Ramah, who's Ashkenazic posek, still goes back a little bit to the Rambam and says, but the stringent ones still are going to wait 6 hours. That's why many Ashkenazim, even though we follow the Ramah usually, But many Ashkenazim, most Ashkenazim, have taken on the opinion of the Ramah that says 6 hours, because even the Ramah himself, he quotes the Tosfot, he says you could rely on it, he says that's the custom, but yet he still recommends that you keep 6 hours. But where does the 3 and the 4 and everything in between come from? So we know where the 1 hour comes from. We know where the 6 hours comes from. Where does all the middle come from? So this is really interesting. If you look at 14, 15, and 16, where this will close. We're not going to read every line. Line 14, if you look at the underlined part, it's a pre-chadash. It's one of the achronim. Humiyu lav davka sheshot. It's not only 6 hours. Because what about the winter when the days are short? When do you eat your meals in the winter? Again, it's before electricity. When they ate their meals, so they had a shorter window because the days were shorter. So it wasn't a 6 hour window anymore. It was maybe a 3-4 hour window. What about that? And he says that lo kemiflagi bein yamim katzarim liyam arukim. And the halacha doesn't differentiate between short days and long days. So all Marukva said was the next meal. Next meal in the winter in these countries, right? These are northern countries. They're not in Bavel. They're not in Eretz Yisrael where the days are a little bit longer. In these northern countries, the days are shorter. Those days are shorter. We're eating. Our time is shorter. So if in the winter I could wait 4 hours because that's when my next meal is, in the summer I can't. If it's about how long it gets digested, we're finishing, then in the summer, the same digestion applies, even right? So once they started to wait shorter in the winter, in the summer they were waiting shorter time as well. And that's the Mizmor LeDavid quotes it as well. Midesharu b'cholrev, tu'ed moshech tam. They figured, you know, if the taste doesn't last more than 4 hours in the winter, why should it last more than that in the summer? And that's perhaps, seems to be, how these other countries got these customs of the 3 hours, the 4 hours, you know, the in-between hours. It's basically a takeoff on the 6 hours, but between the meals, in the different locales where people lived, they often would wait, perhaps in the winter, a shorter amount of time. And Rav Avadi Yosef quotes, and a lot of people have this, into the sixth hour, right? Where does that come from? So perhaps that comes from the Rambam that we saw, Kamo Sheshot, and I heard in the name of the Rav, the people who quoted the Rav on this one as well, and Rav Avadi Yosef quotes it as well, Lule de Mistefina, if I was not afraid to say it, I would say it, obviously he's saying it, so he's not so afraid, Sheim Chaser Mi Sheshot Pachot Mechatzi Isha, if it was less than a half hour, less than 6 hours, which means as long as you're 5.5 hours plus a little bit, Mutar Aflik Dolim, even, he's not just talking about kids, he says even adults, should be able to eat. Sure, katav haRambam kamo sheshaot. So perhaps the Rambam and Rav Yosef seems to say it's no problem, and it's quoted in the name of the Rav, different variations of this. That's where you get that. So again, let's summarize the shiur, and with this we'll close. The question was really, where do you get all these different times between milk and meat? So we started with a little bit of history between milk and meat. Where does that come from? In the end, we saw the Gemara's two main Gemara's. One says all you have to do is wash and clean. The other Gemara quotes Mar Ukva, who had this custom, unlike his father, of waiting an entire day, he would wait just to the next meal. What does the next meal mean? The next meal, you have two opinions. You have Tosfot and Rambam. Tosfot says next meal means just wash, bench, clear the table, next meal. Rambam says, no, you have to wait the time that it would normally be to the next meal. Talmidei Chachamim ate at 6 hours and 12 hours, so that this average time for a meal, says the Rambam, is kamo sheshot. So you have three opinions, Rabbeinu Tam, the Ri, the Tosfot rather, and the Rambam. How do we get to all our opinions? Well, the 1 hour is, seems to be a takeoff of the Tosfot. The Ramah holds like the Tosfot, but says the custom seems to be to wait a little extra. And even in the end, the Ramah says recommends to hold 6 hours, which is why Men Ashkenazim hold 6 hours. The Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch obviously does say 6 hours. Where do you get in between? It seems to be a takeoff on the Suda the Suda of the Rambam, but a shorter time frame in some northern European locales, and therefore once they did it in the winter, they also started to do it in the summer. And even the 6 hours perhaps is a little bit flexible, according to Ravadi Yosef, based on the Rambam, and the Rav Soloveitchik, I heard in his name, say that as well, it's a little bit flexible based on the phrase of Kemoshe Shot, that it's not a precise amount of time, like a Zman of sunrise or sunset, but it's just an average digestion, and therefore. But the bottom line is everyone should follow their family custom and ask their rabbi. This is not a shiur to give any piskei halakha. It's just to understand where all these different customs came from. You should follow your family custom and what your rabbi says. Thanks for coming.